Harrisburg something.
Hi, I'm Sarah, and I'm an addict. I was really looking forward to this being a dark campfire meeting where people didn't have to look at me. Unfortunately, it rained, and now we're in here, so I'll have to deal with that, I suppose, and be honest in the light, I guess, is what I would consider it. When I was first asked a few hours ago to speak at this workshop, I wasn't sure necessarily, and you know, my co-speaker, we were talking about it. If I don't have that lifestyle of when I got in here, I didn't gamble, I wasn't a gangster, I didn't necessarily do a lot of those maybe very obvious public things that would say that I continue that lifestyle. But if I think back on what happened before I started using and the lifestyle I had and how I lived my life, then it definitely applies. I think to explain a lot of my actions, I'm going to go back really far, and I'm going to say, when I was born, my mother was already separated from my father, and it was due to my father cheating on her, and he didn't want to accept her ultimatum of, you know, leave this woman and be with me and your family. He wanted to have both, his cake and eat it too, and she wasn't okay with that. And I think so from that moment, even though I was just a baby, that abandonment issue became huge in my life. And, like, the need for male attention became huge in my life. I was always looking for something to fill that spot, that void, that was just there in my life. When I was in middle school, I started all of a sudden just getting depressed, and I couldn't explain why. Like, I didn't want to do life. I didn't want to go to school. My teachers started noticing. I was a good kid, you know, straight-A student, goody-two-shoes for the most part. Probably most of the rebels hated me. But when this started happening, I think I just started looking for ways outside of myself, even if they weren't that obvious, to get outside of myself. And whenever I was a senior in high school, I had already started, you know, I'd taken my first hit of pot, I drank a little, drank a lot, partied, you know, I'd been trying all those other things to get outside of myself, and all of a sudden the straw broke, and I ended up in a hospital because I tried to kill myself. I spent a few days there. Apparently, after a few days, you're cured. And I was told that I just kind of thought that the psychiatrist I had then thought that I needed that depression that I thought it fueled my creativity because I wanted to be a writer or an actress or someone really special. And I kind of disagreed. And my mother said that I was just trying to play her and get my way because pretty much after that, I did whatever I wanted. And my big excuse was always, well, I mean, fine, you know. I don't have to be here. I can leave this world. But if I'm going to stay here, I'm going to do what I want to do. And not long after that, I moved out of my mom's house, and my partying started getting worse, and I started looking for more and more ways. I used people, these places, and these things, whatever I could use. So when I came into this program, part of my ways and means and the things that I did and that lifestyle dealt with using people, burning bridges, using drugs, using, like I said, anything I could to get out of myself. So I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous in 2001, but I didn't stay necessarily. I was here for 2.5 years, stayed clean for 2.5 years, and I relapsed. And I think that 2.5 years is really where that lifestyle part hurt me because the lifestyle caused me, not caused, like I caused myself, but I chose to pick up but I wasn't living the way that the spiritual principles tell us to live. And I think that that's a huge part of why. Like, I looked good on the outside, and I could sure talk good, but when it came to, like, living and feeling okay about myself on the inside, that wasn't there. You know, I came into the rooms in that 2001 and didn't talk to a lot of people, kind of kept to myself. I was really scared. I heard someone else say that earlier today, and I really related to it. I didn't know how to open up. You know, I came from a family that wasn't necessarily very good at being, you know, sensitive and emotional and talking about their feelings. You know, it was okay to like, hug or whatever, but we didn't really talk about why we felt how we did. And a lot of people from the outside always wonder why. Like, I never really thought about it, but someone actually said to me at one point, yeah, you guys never really seemed that happy. But I always thought I was pretty happy. But I think it was just, you know, it was a show or trying to, as the youngest, trying to be the clown of the group in my family. And when I came in, I didn't necessarily come in for myself. I came in because I wanted everybody else off my back. You know, I had tried to kill myself again, and I spent a week in a hospital this time. So it went from 3 days to a week. In a week, I was cured. And I had a different psychiatrist who had all different other thoughts on it and wanted me to try all these different antidepressants. And so I went along with that. And actually, he was pretty smart because he said, you know what? You really need to just stop doing drugs and drinking like you are, because that was what I did. You know, I didn't know how to necessarily live with myself any other way. It wasn't necessarily just living, it was living with myself. You know, like I said, I burned bridges. I had lived in Pittsburgh for a year. I tried going to school for acting. That didn't work out. So I did the whole geographical change, thinking if I go to IUP for whatever reason, that I would be able to not use so much because I was out of Pittsburgh. But it only took 2 weeks and spiraled out of control after that. And I was the person who, you know, half of the time I probably would end up on your sofa or in your bathroom puking and dry heaving, or doing absolutely something ridiculous. You know, I didn't know until after I got clean that most people were really scared to be around me a lot of times, and they just wanted me to stop using, which is hilarious because they could keep using, but I was absolutely nuts, and I could not. So when I came in here, it was because my psychiatrist was telling me I needed to stop, my mom was telling me I needed to stop, my counselor was telling me I needed to stop, and when I went and did this whole, like, outpatient program thing, they pretty much said, yeah, you have a problem, and you will probably fit better in Narcotics Anonymous. I had never heard of NA in my entire life. I heard of AA, I saw it on shows, I knew what that was about, but I'd never heard of NA, and I was like, what the heck? Like, whatever. You know, I just need people to stop bugging me. I went out and had my big last hurrah, which ended in emotional craziness again. I started this outpatient program, which required me to go to 3 meetings a week. So I was one of those paper sign people. And eventually, like, over that summer, 3 meetings wasn't enough. And I started going to more. And even though I wasn't talking to people, I started going, and I eventually started opening up, and I started making connections, but there was still something kind of damaged about me, something that I was still trying to fill. And it wasn't until like 6 months after I'd come into the room, 5 months, that once again I was back in a psych center. You know, instead of killing myself, I decided to pick up razors and thought that cutting myself would stop the pain, or at least would make me feel okay, alive. I don't even know what it necessarily was, but there was some form of release. You know, I was really messed up. Somebody actually told a friend that I had more issues than Sports Illustrated, and I have to remind myself of that because it's true. You know, I came in here, I had eating disorders, I had relationship disorders. I don't even know if I would call most of the things I had relationships. You know, obviously I had drug problems. I knew, like, from that moment, and especially going into that hospital again after cutting myself, that this was about more than the drug for me. And I had to treat it as if it was about more than the drug. So then I could treat it from, like, okay, so maybe I need to not do the razor thing. But I wasn't going to necessarily look at all those other things in my life. Even though I thought I was, I think I'm really good. We're really good at lying to ourselves, and I was really excellent at lying to myself. You know, I thought, oh, I'll get a commitment in area. I'll start being the GSR in my group. I'll start getting in friendships. And, you know, I was a really, really bad first-year person. You know, I got in relationships. Like I said, if you could call them that. I wasn't good at being alone at all. And I used, like, I just used that. I needed somebody to love me because I didn't know how to love myself. And meanwhile, still having eating disorder problems and still going through all of that other stuff that was with me before I even picked up the drug. And that's where, like, that is my lifestyle. Like, my lifestyle was self-sabotage, self-mutilation, internal mutilation, physical mutilation, whatever it was. I didn't think I deserved anything happy in this world because I was abandoned. And why would you abandon somebody who deserved something? Obviously, I didn't have the greatest relationship with my father, but I have since the rooms, and that's something, a blessing that I've had, somewhat repaired that relationship. And, you know, I'm actually, he was out this summer, which was amazing because he just came to visit myself and my husband, and my dog allowed him in the house, which is pretty cool because my dog has a little bit of a territorial issue. And you know, that's one of the blessings that I've gotten since then, but that certainly wasn't there for a very long time. So I had, like, all these excessive failed one-night stands, I guess you would call them, in recovery. And then I kind of thought, okay, well, I need to change, like, how I'm looking at this, and I got with the good guy, I guess you could say. Like, I wasn't going to go for the bad guy anymore, and I got with the good guy, the guy that, like, before he had a year clean, and I invited him to a retreat with a group of people. It wasn't even just me inviting him. He said, no, I don't have a year clean. I can't hang out with you. I have to hang out with the guys. You know, they called him Basic Text Brett. So, like, he was really serious, and he, like, did things how they were supposed to be done and followed suggestions. And I never really asked for suggestions. I think that was the big difference. Like, I never, like, I did in a way, but I didn't ask for the really big ones that I should have, and I didn't listen to necessarily what I heard in the rooms. But this is my process, and, like, since this, I've accepted, like, I needed to go through this, and sometimes it's difficult because, like, tonight, my husband said to me, you know, when you heard 10 years being called out in clean time, like, did you get upset or did you get angry? Because I would have 10 years, but I don't because I chose not to. But that was my process. And, yes, I get upset and sometimes I get angry and sometimes I get pissed off. But you know what? That just reminds me that I need to be pissed off at the disease of addiction, not anything else, you know. And I need to learn from those mistakes that I made so that I don't repeat them again. And I need to change that lifestyle. So I got with this guy, and I hadn't really changed my thought process on relationships, I think. And if you didn't show me the attention that I thought that I needed to, like, prove that that relationship was solid, I was going to seek it elsewhere. Whether it was through flirtatious email, through flirtatious interactions, through whatever I needed to seek it through. And eventually, it was a one-night stand with someone else and drinking, you know? 3 Long Island iced teas into the night, I was at a hotel, and I had destroyed not only my clean time and my self-respect, but I had destroyed any semblance of self-love that I had for myself. And I knew that the moment I woke up the next day, because I looked in the mirror and I absolutely hated who I saw. And I hadn't really, like, even though I wasn't necessarily completely okay with myself, I hadn't really hated myself in a pretty long time. And that was hate, like looking at myself. And I did the only thing I knew how to do, which was show up at my sponsor's door and sleep it off and go to a meeting and pick up a key tag. And, you know, through that process, obviously there was a lot of stuff going on, and I wasn't really honest to my significant other at the time. And, you know, he knew I had relapsed, but he didn't know I had cheated on him, at least for a week or so. And he said he needed time, but that didn't last very long because we're addicts and, you know, we want to make everything perfect now and not have to deal with all that emotional stuff. Until he asked me, and I couldn't lie. And I have to think back on that a lot because, like, the sound of his voice and the things that he said were everything that I felt inside about myself. And I knew that that's exactly what I was, and it wasn't who I wanted to be. So instead of, like, dealing with that in that moment, I went and took a pain pill. And then I picked up another key tag and went to another meeting and started the process over again. And this time, like, that relationship had been severed. And I had to deal with what I had to deal with on my own. And so, you know, I kind of surrounded myself with some of the females and some of, you know, the good guys, like the people that were seriously in my support group around me. And I started to piece back who I thought I could be and who I wanted to be instead of what I thought I deserved, because obviously I didn't think that I deserved very much in this life. And I think that that's really, for me, that's where change began. Even though I'd come in and I'd put down the drug for a while, I hadn't changed who I thought I was, and I hadn't decided to be the person that I really wanted people to see me as. You know, I didn't decide to be a better person all the way around. And I had to come in and I had to work on all of that stuff. And I had to look at, like, why did I do what I did? And, like, does that mean that those emotions aren't there now? That, like, whenever I'm not getting the attention I think I need, because we have all these character defects that I don't, like, think, oh, I should go seek attention elsewhere. I'm an addict, you know? Sometimes I think about picking up a drug. I'd be surprised if you guys didn't too. So sometimes part of my addiction is I think about getting attention from other people. But that's part of my addiction, and I know that that's not where I want to go, and that's not who I want to be. And so I sit through it, and I do something else, and I go to a meeting. And I've learned to, like, use recovery for all of those lifestyle issues that I've had. Like I said, it's not just about picking up the drug for me, because sometimes that's just the cloak of how I really feel and what's really going on. It's just a way to, like, mask. And it's, you know, it's okay because I drank. Like, seriously. You know, it's okay. I can tell myself it's okay because I drank. And that's why I did what I did. When I know full well that that was, like, just a means to an end. You know, it wasn't just because I drank. And all that's so entangled in who, you know, what I thought I was and my addiction. You know, I'm proud to say that, you know, I've rebuilt that relationship, and we've been together, and coming next week we'll have been married for 3 years. You know, we had a lot of issues to work through, obviously, and it took time. I had a lot of issues to work through, and it took time, and it wasn't easy. And a lot of those character defects maybe weren't acted out in such an extreme way, but they came out, and they had to be looked at, and I had to take a look at, like, was I making sure that what I was doing and how I wanted to feel was also reflected in what I was saying? And, like, were they matching up? And was I just making something pretty on the outside but not on the inside? So relationships were huge for me as far as I was – actually, I brought these cassettes from past retreats and past speakers to have a friend put on CD or put on MP3s for me. And I'm looking at them, and out of my, you know, 10 years in recovery – in the rooms, I have 3 or 4 intimacy and relationship tapes. And I'm thinking, wow, I must have really thought that that was a problem because obviously I picked up all these tapes on it instead of like, and that was just another thing, like, oh, I'll pick this up because I know that it needs to be better in my life, but am I going to actually listen to it? Am I going to make a change? And it is all about change today. You know, I had to change every fucking thing in my life. Sometimes I heard that and I thought, whatever. You know, there's things that are good, but I don't necessarily think of it like, obviously I didn't change my family, I didn't change, like, all of those things. I had to change how I thought about myself, and I had to change how I reacted to how I thought about myself. You know, we can think about using. It's just not good to obsess about it, and it's certainly not good to act on it. And when I have any of those thoughts that are part of my past lifestyle, I have to put them out on the light, and I have to talk about them. And I have to recognize them for what they are. And generally, it's that I need to work on something in myself, and I need to get to a meeting. I need to talk to somebody. I haven't, you know, like it's been. I don't even know the last time I cut, which is pretty amazing. Like it's been over. I don't know. My clean date, we'll say from everything, is February 24th, 2004. And since then, I haven't done those self-destructive things that I used to do. And that's pretty amazing. I have a lot of gratitude for that, and it's all because of the rooms, because if I didn't look at things as just more than the drug and that lifestyle will kill me, then I don't think I'd be where I am today. God help.
I'd like to introduce the next speaker. One of my best friends growing up, one of my close friends, Brett.
Hi, everybody. I'm an act named Brett. Tough act to follow there. Thanks for sharing, sir. If the drugs won't kill you, the lifestyle will. I have to admit, when Stefan asked me that, I kind of thought, me? As well, because, you know, when I got clean, I got like a Rockaware jean jacket and a couple FUBU shirts and stuff, but I was never a gangster or, I don't know, I just thought the lifestyle topic is like, I don't know, somebody who's still running, but, you know, I'm kind of just your average white guy, but, you know, when Sarah and I were talking, the lifestyle is people, places, and things, you know, whatever it was in your life. And, you know, I came in these rooms at least 2 years before I actually got clean. Excuse me. And, you know, Rob, lots of other friends I had in my life, you know, a lot of people say people they used with, they weren't really their friends, but, you know, a lot of these people I knew growing up my whole life and, you know, through active addiction, they were the only people in my life, and I thought that, you know, they were my family. I would die for these people. There's nothing that could happen that I could cut these people out of my life. So, you know, that was the people. And, you know, after the first couple treatment facilities I was at, it was like, obviously still in a lot of denial, but I'm not cutting these people out of my life. I'll go to their house, I won't use, but, you know, it's the only thing I know. So I'm going back to it. And, you know, places, I could take a little different spin on places. Like, for a long time, in that period when I was trying to get clean, like, I wouldn't let go of stuff because I had to keep the facade up. Like, I wouldn't let go of a job that I'm stealing thousands of dollars for. Like, I can't imagine, like, living in some kind of rehab facility. Like, you know, I left claw marks in this life that was already shattered for fear of taking a risk to, like, get well. If anybody can understand that, I don't. So, and also, like, just like, admitting defeat and going to, like a long-term facility, like a Salvation Army or something. Like, I wasn't that guy. I wasn't that messed up. I remember, I grew up in Altoona, PA, and, you know, I remember a couple times in active addiction driving past the Salvation Army, and, you know, at this period of my life, my mother and I, just anytime we got near each other, it was, and she'd be like, "You're going to end up in there someday, you know." "Shut up, Mom." You know, I did end up in there. Best thing that ever happened to me, really, but neither of us really saw it that way at the time. But, you know, and things like just the drugs or the activities or just the places in Altoona, you know, it was what I knew. I wasn't real familiar with NA or, like, open to a different social group or scene, and at least early on, you know, left claw marks in it, like other things. And what it took was, like, you know, a year of shooting dope and, like, being dope sick for, like, 5 years and, you know, burning all the bridges with family. And, like, at some point I became a little willing to, like, let go of these things. And, you know, like, employers and family members helped me let go by firing me and kicking me out of the house. And, you know, you become willing to make some changes when you become homeless in December. So, you know, so I had got enough pain from that lifestyle. And ended up in a treatment facility. Pretty broken down. And, you know, like Sarah, I was kind of a good kid for a while growing up, and it was kind of like, how did all this happen, you know? And, like, I was so attached to keeping up an image, too, like, oh, what are people going to think about me? But, you know, for once I kind of said, like, screw it, I'm just, like, I'm checking out for life for a while, and I'm going to try this thing for real this time. Because rehabs before were keep a home and find a new drug connection and detox. And this time it was like, God, anything but the status quo. And, you know, so detoxed and did the facility. And at the time, I had dropped out of college, you know, a few months ago. Shooting dope in college don't mix. And I was like, I'm going to treat this like going to school, you know. Got up, got there on time, studied. I was very open to learning anything that anyone would teach me. And I started soaking in. And, you know, I started working on that basic text, Brett image that Sarah brought up. Ready Business was another name. And relationships with family were still damaged. My time had ended there. Didn't have money to get into some regular facility. And Salvation Army took me in. And that was a place in Altoona where, like, you can do a lot of dirt out of there if you want. You can do a lot of good out of there if you want. It's really what you make of it, because there's more freedom in that place than there is in a typical facility. And, you know, I did a lot of hiking around town to get to meetings every night. And I tried, even though I didn't have a lot of time, I tried to help a lot of other new guys. And I got a lot out of that. And in previous rehabs and outpatient facilities and stuff, I had met a couple guys that I had heard, you know, one of them's back in the rooms and some of them are still in the rooms. And, you know, they would pick me up and they threw me a line. And, you know, my sponsor, Scott, like a year prior to me getting clean, I saw him detoxing from heroin in this outpatient facility I was in. And this guy was like an old school 25-year-old, bun to a day junkie. And I saw him get clean, and that was a miracle enough for me, you know, to trust him to guide me through this process. And, you know, he did that. And but this whole time I'm still in my hometown, and in the Salvation Army, you're allowed to go out, except for when you're working. And so I was confronted with that people, places, and things thing again. And something Sarah said, like, for once, I knew I had to change everything about my previous lifestyle. I saw somebody I got high with, I ran from. I didn't go, like, I listened to that voice inside of me that I didn't listen to before. Like, if I had talked somewhere before, even if it was like a convenience store, I avoided those places. You know, I just, like, even my father, I'd used with my father, and, like, this was hard to do, but I had to say to him, like, if you can't stop from using around me, like, I can't be around you. And he's respected that since, for the most part. And even my brother was still in active addiction at the time, and, like, I was closer to with my brother than anyone in the world at that time, and, like, I had to avoid him. I said, if you want to see me, come in the facility and see me. And, like, and by him doing that, eventually it kind of planted a seed with him. But, you know, I wish I had some of that drive and energy that I did in early recovery now at times. Like, Sarah thinks I'm crazy, but I sometimes, like, man, I wish I could take a vacation for the week at the Sally. That would be awesome. Because that's, like, you know, like the best. Like, it was a whole new world back then. And it was whatever it takes. And, you know, that, like, foundation that I built back then has kept me clean. And, like, I need to do some work on my program today. Like, I've had a sponsorship situation for some time now that I need to get ironed out. And, you know, my life's real full with good stuff, but I'm only guaranteed to make one meeting a week, and I could probably do better than that. And, you know, I live right today. I live by the spiritual principles. I try not to. Well, I don't steal or lie or do any of those things I used to, but I'm feeling a little stagnant and, like, growing spiritually and, you know, having a spiritual guide. And, like, I catch myself sometimes lately always living in, like, man, it'd be better if I lived here, because, like, life would be better. Or it'd be better if I had this job, because then life would be more fun. Like, a little too much lately. Like, I've been in that, I know it's greener on the other side. And, you know, listening to the main speaker tonight and, like, some of the meetings here, and even talking about early recovery, it's like, it's good. It's good. I just need to, like, open my mind to feeling that good a little bit more. And, you know, I always get a little spiritual check when I show up at this convention because it's kind of like my roots. I've been here, we were talking, 8 out of 9 years since I got clean. And I'm always a little resentful that there's not more Altoona people here that I got clean with. But yet, I'm always sure to see Rich and Chuck and Art and Rob and, you know, a bunch of guys that, you know, we met most of those guys up at Area Service and, you know, the Altoona-Indiana conflict there. It was kind of but now, you know, these guys are the predecessors. Got a lot of respect for all of them. And they're still here. So, that's all I got. Thanks for letting me share.
I would like to thank the speakers for sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Could we have the reading just for today from the podium?
I'm 19, Jen.
Amen.
Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So as long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
Okay. Here we have a lovely way of closing. We have a moment for the addict who's still suffering, sometimes you, sometimes me.
I always have a pair buried inside the throne.